Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Ask the experts about free fitting on all our kitchens. cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb@rte.ie.
Taoiseach Micheál Martin has said he was shocked at recent reports that Wicklow County Council intended to dezone land for housing, and he promised that the government will intervene. But then Wicklow County Council hit back, saying there are no such plans to dezone any land currently designated for housing. But the spat highlights the issue of land for housing. Is there a shortage of it? Is it having an impact on supply? Well, here to discuss this and some of the other issues around housing is Lorcan Sir, who's Senior Lecturer in Housing at the Technological University in Dublin. Lorcan, good to have you back with us on the programme to go through what's happening. Will we start with that row over zoned land? I mean, we don't particularly want to focus on that contested situation in Wicklow, but is it fair of the government to criticise local councils in general for not zoning enough land? Is the government right there?
Morning, Claire. Yeah, well, one of the interesting things about the amount of zoned land in the country is that there's very little data on it. So we're in a way we're kind of pointing in the dark here, because we really don't know how much residential zoned land there is, or land zoned out there there is for housing, and then how much of that is serviced by, you know, water and capacity for electricity. And in any event, like, just because land is zoned, it doesn't necessarily mean there'll be any housing in it. It just means that the land, the permission that you'll get, you're more likely to get permission for housing. The interesting thing there is that the government have introduced a whole set of evidence-led methodologies to determine how many houses each county needs, right? So Wicklow and Carlow and everybody else, every 10 years, they have to do what's called a housing needs and demand assessment. So they go out, they look at their population, they look at likely future trends in their population, and they determine how much housing they need and where that's going to go. And typically it's closer, as close as they can to the urban centres that they have, to make better use of land and roads and schools and all that kind of stuff. And then the government come along and, without really seemingly any evidence at all, kind of try to undermine that by saying, well, actually, no, you need to change that and rezone land. So some counties will say, well, our population's only going to grow by 22%. We have enough land zoned here for like 72%. So therefore, we're going to dezone some of that land. And that makes sense in a way. Like, you don't want too much land zoned. We've been there before, nearly 20 years ago, and we ended up with housing all over the place that we ended up in ghost estates and housing that we didn't need. So we have a whole set of professionals in local authorities whose job it is to go out and do these assessments and then make the zonings. And then the government kind of are coming along and, seemingly without much evidence at all, seem to be undermining this. Now, Wicklow pushed back quite hard on it and said, actually, that there was very little evidence to say that they were dezoning land. They said they weren't dezoning land. Now, for some people who
When you say undermining it, like, is the government's priority not to get as much land ready, willing and able to be developed for housing? Is that not what everybody wants the government to do?
Well, if you think about it, zoned land isn't a house. Zoned land means that you have land that's maybe worth 20,000 an acre and suddenly is worth 1 million an acre because it's zoned for land. There is no guarantee that you will go out and get planning permission for housing, or that that planning permission will then turn into houses. What it does is makes people very wealthy who happen to own that land. And if you look at the, you know, the house building companies that are in Ireland, they're not making all their money. They're not worth hundreds of millions of euro for making 21% profit on every house. They're making their book value comes from all the land that they own. Now, they need to own a good bit of land to have a future pipeline for housing. But there's also, you know, there's enough land out there. Well, there's land out there. There's planning permission for 70,000 houses in Ireland sitting around unused. So really, do you need more land, you know, that you can get planning permission for housing on, when there's already tens of thousands of permissions out there granted for housing that's sitting unused?
So would say the blockage is not whether the land is zoned or not. It's about building the houses that you have permission to build.
Yeah, absolutely. And then that goes back to the idea of planning permissions. And we use planning permissions as a metric then for housing. So planning permissions are down this year. A planning permission isn't a guarantee of a house at all. You know what? You need to look at our commencement notices. And that's like 4 weeks before you go on site, you lodge a notice with the local authority to say we're starting building. That's a much more accurate indicator. So there's no real relationship between the amount of zoned land that you get and the amount of housing that you get. But it does make an awful lot of people very wealthy. Now, we do have a residential zoned land tax for land that is zoned residential that's not being used. And there will some people be out there who will be very happy to see their land dezoned, because particularly if it's in a prime site, eventually it'll come around and be rezoned again, because they'll avoid the tax. And what people, you know, there's a lot of complaints then about judicial reviews as well. What people don't realise is that about 26%, according to Fred Lowe, the solicitor, about 26% of all judicial reviews are taken by landowners, you know, developers and people who own valuable land against things like the residential zoned land tax. So it's not all bad news, but, you know, you can't employ professionals and give them evidence-led methodologies and then turn around and undermine them.
Okay, now you're writing today in the Irish Times about the impact of house prices, of apartment shortages on what our cities look like, the fabric of our city. So you're saying you either have to be extremely wealthy and have 850 grand in your back pocket to live in a city, or be somebody who's entitled to social housing. The people in between, there's nothing there for them.
Yeah, so what I went and I looked at through the CSO data, I looked at how many houses and apartments were built in various urban locations, mostly Dublin and Cork, and then how many of them were sold. So it's really interesting when you come to look at the likes of Dublin, for example. Where are my numbers here? So Dublin, we built in Dublin County, we built nearly 11,000 houses last year. And out of that, we sold, I can't remember how many we sold. We sold 8% of all the apartments. Out of that 11,000, 8% of the apartments are sold, and just over half of the houses. In Dublin City alone, right, we built 3,350 new homes. We sold 111 apartments. Like over 3,000 of those were apartments. We sold 111, and we sold just 44 new houses in housing estates. Now, they're the things that most of us, an awful lot of us, would have grown up in a housing estate in Dublin City, 44 of them. In Cork, out of the 313 new apartments that were delivered last year, just 9 were sold. And out of the 856 new houses, like in housing estates, just 44 were bought
so
by households.
So where are they all going?
They're moving farther and farther away.
No, no, but where are those homes that are built and available? Yeah. Where are they being? Who's in them?
Yeah, they're being taken up by investors, which are, you know, small investors and funds, and they're also being taken up by councils and approved housing bodies, particularly the apartments. So we can see, you know, 3,100 something apartments were built in Dublin City last year, and they only sold 111. And the average price then of each new apartment in Dublin City last year was 875.
Well, they're selling more. If they're selling them to investors, they're selling more than the figures that you have here. You're referring to households who buy them.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. But so the balance are being sold to approved housing bodies, local authorities, or investors. But it means there's no homes for people to buy.
Yeah.
You know, so who are we looking after here? Are we looking after the investment community and local authorities and approved housing bodies? But what happens then to ordinary households who are looking for homes to buy? Because we know, I was listening to Owen earlier on, you know, talking about the pensions. We know in Ireland, like, the system is set up so that you need to be a homeowner, and when you retire at 55 or 65 or 66, whatever it is, you can afford to live on a modest state pension, which is less than 15,000 a year, roughly, you know, because you don't have a mortgage.
But if you don't have your home and you're paying rent,
and it's a huge problem, because increasingly we have more and more people retiring in as they rent, and we have very poor security of tenure in Ireland. And then if your salary goes from 30,000 or 40,000 down to 14,000, but your rent won't reduce commensurately, so therefore that's a bit of a time bomb ticking there.
And can you
explain
why it's more attractive for a property developer to sell a home to an investor rather than a householder?
Yeah, particularly a local authority or an approved housing body, because there's an awful lot of land out there that has planning permission for, say, apartments, but there's nobody out there in the private sector to buy them anymore. That money has gone. So what happens is then they can't get funding from a bank to develop it. But if they get a letter or an agreement with a local authority or approved housing body to say, if you build these, we will either fund the development or we guarantee to buy them at the end, so forward fund or forward purchase, that person, the developer, can then go to the bank and say, hey, look, you know, Carlow County Council are going to buy my 100 apartments. Can I borrow the money now? And then say yes, because they've got a guaranteed seller at the end of it. It's just easier. And it's easier to sell them all in one block, but, you know, to
see,
one purchaser.
What I can't understand is, if you reduce the amount of properties available for councils and approved housing bodies, you're creating another problem, because they need them to cater for people who are, in some cases, homeless. And you're helping the people who have a mortgage and are waiting to buy. That's great for them, but you're creating a problem on the other side.
Yeah, if you squeeze the balloon at one end, it inflates at the other.
Exactly.
Yeah. So the issue there is that councils need to build an awful lot more. Last year, out of the 8,000 social houses that the government claim were built, there's only about 1,700 that were actually built by councils. Now, when I say built by councils, I don't mean council workers went out with shovels and pickaxes. They subcontracted out to build. My house was built by Crampton's back in 1929, for example. That's the way it's done. done. Marino was built by Sisks. So that's the way it's done. But they only built 1,700 out of the 8,000. I mean, back in the day, you know, when we were building at the peak in 1975, out of the 8,500 social houses that were built, they were all built by councils. Nowadays, they're you know, two-thirds of them are delivered by approved housing bodies. And of course, the state doesn't own those. It doesn't become part of the council housing stock. So really, it's the state that needs to up its game in directly delivering far more council housing and not buying from the market. You know, not buying from, not essentially like they're kind of bailing out guys who have land with planning permission and nobody to buy it. And the councils and approved housing bodies are stepping in and saying, well, we'll do that for you. And of course, they're paying through the nose for it then as well. That's the other issue.
So what do our cities or what, you know, what are our cities looking like now because this is happening?
Yeah, so if you take, we'll just take Dublin as an example. So for the last 3 years, over 95% of all the new houses that have been built in Dublin City have been apartments. And about 95% of those have been for rent. So there's nowhere to buy and there's very few houses coming up. The average price of a new house last year in Dublin City was 630,000 and 875,000 if you were lucky enough to find an apartment for sale. So the problem then is everybody's fleeing to the Midlands and beyond the Midlands and down to Carlow. And you see the biggest house price rises last year were on the border county. So people are moving to Cavan and Monaghan and Sligo and Leitrim and those places. And then they're commuting. They're getting into the second-hand Skoda Octavia and the 2 litre diesel and dropping the kids off and driving into work and driving home and all that kind of stuff. So the implication for cities there is that you end up with cities where the only housing available, new housing, is available for very wealthy people. Effectively, right? So you're thinking farmer workers, tech workers, you know, 28 to 35 year olds on six figure salaries. And that's great and wonderful. But like cities need families. And we have a whole load of infrastructure designed for families, particularly things like primary schools. And then, of course, what we have is people move into cities who have no kids. There's no kids to go into the schools. And then the schools start thinking about closing down, which they are doing. Some are doing. So what you find is that the cities become places for the haves and the have nots. So people who are always who are in need of housing, like the councils will at some stage try and look after them, right? And then you have the very wealthy who can afford to buy €875,000 apartments or pay €2,500 a month rent. The people in between, the average wage of €48,000-€49,000 a year, so your average bus driver, right, is always a good example, or somebody doing an ordinary job, the person who makes the breakfast roll in the Spar Deli early in the morning, they're commuting from Longford. They're not living in the city. So you miss all that. Families, for example, is a good idea. Like we aren't designing or delivering housing for families. One beds, you know, who's going to raise a family in a one bed? So they're all moving farther away. And they're moving then farther away from their family support network. You know, grannies and granddads who look after the kids after school, their friends, their GA clubs, all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. They're moving farther away because they have to. Because they understand that in order to survive when you retire, you need to be the homeowner. And renting all your life in a one bed or two bed isn't good enough.
Yeah, and you know, You're right about this, and you draw that picture so clearly where you have the €6 coffee, the €10 craft beer, the €60 steak and the food bank.
Yeah, and rising homelessness, rising social inequality and the food bank. And you see that in cities that don't work because you get rising crime as well. Mm-hmm. And so it's not a city that you want. Some of the most successful cities. So this year I spent a good bit of time up in the Baltics in Vilnius and Riga and Tallinn. And they're really nice cities. And one of the interesting things you notice there is that there's a whole variety of accommodation. Families live in the city. There's a whole variety of incomes. You see it because you see people pushing buggies, you know, around the place. You see women in particular jogging at nighttime. So they're safe because there's a whole variety of people. And you see the various income levels in these cities as well. And they're really, really nice places.
That's the way you want it to be.
That's exactly the way you want it to be. You don't want cities of haves and have-nots and nothing in between. And what you will get in between is like couples sharing houses with other couples, you know, unwillingly until they all fall out to share the burden, and then they end up back buying a house in Longford anyway,
yeah,
you know, at some stage.
And you don't think that this drive, the fact that the government has housing as its number one priority, that it's going to address any of this?
Well, the number one priority for the government, and Micheál Martin said it to Gavin Jennings the other morning in Cork, was apartments. And Simon Harris has also said this. And like the problem is 90% of apartments don't come up for sale. And we're constantly reducing the standards of apartments as well. So now you can have buildings full of one beds. You know, that's like we have the second highest number of children after Slovakia, under 18s, in our households in Ireland, right? And they live with you until they're 28 on average. I see, have that to look forward to, Claire. They will be with you until they're 28 until they move out. So why is the emphasis on A, on apartments that nobody wants, and B, on apartments that are too small for families? So it's the wrong emphasis. The emphasis is being put on what's very good for investment, but not very good for households. And households are a bit to hell or to collect. You know, out you go there and then look after yourself. And the problem there is, of course, we're facing fines for our you know, environmental breaches of environmental standards and emissions and all that. The farther you make people live from the urban centres and commute in, and they do, we can see it in the data, particularly in the 2 litre, you know, diesel Skoda Octavia or whatever you're having, you know, the worse our emissions are. And so the more the fines are going to be. So you have one policy kind of undermining another policy.
Uh-huh. Now, you also had a listen to George Lee's report this morning from Ishka Aaron and the problems they're facing. They're under huge pressure. They say that if things don't change by 2028, and they won't, because it takes years for them to get planning and go through all of the process that they have to go through to change things, that they're going to have to put restrictions on the number of houses that they can connect to the water and sewage systems. Now, they have the Greater Dublin Area Plan, which is Wicklow and Kildare and so on. And they said it takes 10 years to get that from the planning stage to the point when they can actually go out and do it, and a lot of cash.
Yeah, so I you've had Angela Ryan in here from Ishka Aaron before, and I've written about it in the Irish Times. Like, Ishka Aaron will tell you that there's capacity for about 30 to 35,000 new houses a year in the Greater Dublin area, because it's not, when people think about water, they think about water going into your house, but actually the bigger issue is water going out of your house, the dirty water going out. And Ringsend is at capacity. We're at 98 or 99% water capacity in the Greater Dublin area as it stands. So the idea of having housing targets of anywhere between 52 and 93,000 new houses a year is bizarre, given that we don't have the water to kind of feed them. So what will happen is, you know, you'll have reduced water pressure, you have periods where there's no water, and then planning permissions will be refused because there's no water infrastructure there to actually take the housing in the first place. You know, people ask me quite regularly, well, two things. One, what are the solutions? We'll deal with that again. But, you know, who's to blame for all this? Or, you know, you can't go around forever. Politicians are very good at this, blaming COVID and blaming the great economic unpleasantness. There's three, in my mind, there's three groups of people who are, you know, whose plate our heads this fall. One is the minister and predecessors, without a doubt. And the second are the civil servants and the minister's advisors. They've been given huge power over the years to change things and to make, you know, to change things for the better. And so they need to accept responsibility, I think, for the way outcomes are at the moment, like delivering the wrong type of housing at the wrong price for the wrong people. So, you know, I think we need to apportion blame where it should go.
I saw a report on Sky News about this water and sewage system in London. Exactly the same problem. Creaking Victorian infrastructure. And it's just not popular at any stage, if you look back over the years, to say, well, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to invest in the water pipes.
Of all the countries that you don't want to follow, the UK's housing system is the one that you don't want to follow. And we consistently do that. And a lot of it is a kind of a right-wing ideology where the state shouldn't be spending money, so they don't invest in things. And then chickens come home to roost. We've got no water. We've got no, you know, road capacity. The M50 is full. Airports, all that kind of stuff.
Cheery stuff, Lorcan, isn't
it? Always, Claire, as always.
Thank you so much, Lorcan, sir. We're going to take a break. Back after this.
Get in touch on WhatsApp 0870 32 32 32.